I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. We're going to talk about, you know, how do you shape a modern family? What does the Bible have to say about family? And today we're going to look at a couple of stories about Jesus and his family. And, you know, what was unique about him and how he was in his family? Because the more differences you have, and there's so many differences now, what used to seem like was a great difference now is pretty normal. And yet it's still very different in how people see life within the same family. And that can cause great disagreements. And so the question really becomes, how do we accept each other? And it's possible. Look here in your notes, it's the big idea. You can promote acceptance in your family. And so we'll start the series by talking about acceptance, just this one word. How does that occur? Even though there's a lot of differences and different perspectives and people come from different angles, it's possible to accept each other in our families. Here's to give this some credibility out of the Bible. Accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you, in order to bring praise to God. And I want to kind of play my cards up front. Christianity is not first and foremost about becoming spiritually stronger. You'll always have something in your life that exceeds your current strength. No matter, you know, how far along you are in Jesus. Christianity is not first and foremost about becoming stronger. It's about becoming closer. It's a relationship. And when you run into something in life that's stronger than you, it really comes down to how close am I to Jesus? How are we sharing life together, and especially in family? And Jesus knows all about family. He had a dad and a mom. And he had four brothers and several sisters. And his family had all kinds of different stories swirling around about it. And some people thought he came from a great family. Some people were very suspicious of his family. And I mean, do you think there would be some tension in a family? Like, what do you think it was like for his brothers when you know, Jesus was telling everybody that he came from heaven? You know, that would create a little tension. And then there's a whole story about how he was born and who his real father was. And so he understands family. He had a lot of times in his family life where it was difficult to accept his family members, and it was at times difficult for them to accept him. So please don't put Jesus off in a separate category and says, well, he's, of course, God, and he didn't ever struggle with that stuff. It's not true. John said that he became a person and walked among us. And he lived out his life in a family. I hope you come from a great family, and things have been mostly smooth. But the truth is families have ups and downs, and sometimes a lot of great times, and other times it can be very, very down. You can have a couple key incidents happen in your family, and it can really make it a struggle. So how do we accept each other? And this first note you can write in, acceptance is not based on agreement. So we'll look at a couple stories about Jesus today, and we'll kind of start with the side of, well, what isn't it? And for sure it's not agreement. Let's read the first part of the story, then I'll tell you. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee. Jesus lived out there. His mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Circle that, Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." So here's the deal. Jesus is starting his public ministry, just getting started. And he has a group of friends that's sort of his posse. They're kind of rolling with him, and they're his friends. That's all they are at this point. They're not disciples yet. They're just his friends. And I did want to say that at some point you make the transition with Jesus from being his friend to his disciple. But this story takes place when they're just his friends. They're just some friends of his, and they're hanging out with him, and they're seeing something in him that's different. And they all get invited to this wedding, and then they go there, and Jesus, like his mom, Mary, is there too, which can be a little odd when you like see your parents in a different social context. He's out of the house now, and all of a sudden you're at the wedding, and, oh, there's mom. She's going to be watching everything I do. And here's what happens. Mary wants to involve him in something that he doesn't want to get involved in. And that can create some disagreements in a family. You know, when your parents want you to get involved in something, or they don't want you to get involved with something or someone, that can create some tension. And Mary comes and she says, you know, I really want you to get involved in this problem. And Jesus tells his mom, I don't want to. Mom, I don't want to get involved. I came to the wedding, and I don't want to get involved in what's going on here. And she sort of presses him, but I want you to do this. And of course, that's parents, you know, they're always walking, like, if you, when you have kids, and you, I mean, you're walking this tightrope all the time, how much do you force them? You know, you want them to become musical, so you, like, you force them to take piano lessons. You're so sure that down the road they'll thank you, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You know, you have a 16-year-old daughter, and, you know, she wants to date a 19-year-old guy, and you're wondering, should I let her get involved with that, or, you know, should I buy a gun? It's like, you know, it's hard to know as a parent. You know, what do you force, and what do you not force, and what do you let them do, and what do you not let them do? And the problem, of course, is if you force somebody to do something that they won't in a family, like you force them to do it, and then they don't like it, and it doesn't go well, and they fail at it, they get so angry, and guess who they blame? When I was in junior high school, I was on the track team, and I was a distance runner. So I ran this event, the two-mile event, four times around the tracks, 1 mile. I ran eight times around this track, eight times around the track, two-mile event. And so we go to the track meet, and you know I'm all done with my event. I'm tired from it. And my buddies were mostly these guys I grew up with. They were all sprinters. And so this one kid, his name was Mike Blackledge. I knew him all my life. He was a sprinter, pretty fast. He was the third guy on the relay team. He ran all the sprints. Well, he comes down with some kind of a flu or something. He gets sick, and he can't run in the relay. So he tells the coach, he says, well, I think Robin should take my place. And I'm like, don't point at me, man. I'm a distance guy. I don't know anything about sprinting. I'm not that type of guy. Sprinters were always the cool guys that had the really cool shoes with the spikes in them, and you know they had those. The distance guys had dopey-looking shoes, and they weren't the glamour guys. And I was one of those guys, you know, and they said, well, but Robin should do it. And I said, you guys, I don't even want to. They want me to run in the relay. The baton thing, you know, you got to learn how to do that. You're going to be a relay guy. I'm like, no, I'm not. Don't force me into this. I'm not going to be good at it. I'm going to screw up. We've seen you run before. You're pretty fast. You should do it. Next thing you know, they forced me into the spot. When's the last time your family forced you into something and you just had a hunch, this is not going to go good? But, you know, you felt like, okay. So I get into this thing, and I mean, I'm in the relay, and, you know, they teach me a couple little things, and okay, you're good to go, you know, and they take me out to a place on the track where you're supposed to stand, you know, between these, like, two areas where, like, you got to get the baton, you can't go past this line, you're disqualified, and I'm like, what the heck? I hear the gun go off, and the whole pack starts running. You know, all the guys, and I'm watching my friend, I'm like, wow, he's doing pretty good. He ties the whole pack, and then they give it to the second guy, and he just, like, takes off running, and he gets way ahead of the rest of them. And I'm watching him. He's, like, tearing. You know, he's way ahead of them. And I'm, like, thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm next, you know. And these guys are all chasing him. I'm like, oh, this is, you know, and here he comes. He's, like, he's yelling. I hear, you know, I was like, so I, you know, do what they tell me to do, and I start running, and I feel the baton in my hand, and I just start taking off, and magically, I've still got it in my hand. And, oh, I forgot to tell you, the wind is like gusting. I mean, there's a huge windstorm, but it's at my back. And so, like, I'm tearing down. I'm like out of a cannon. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I'm running so fast. I'm way ahead of the other guys. And I start to think, hey, this isn't so bad. I said, man, I didn't realize I was this fast. I feel like a kite. I'm like smoking these guys, you know, and I'm just tearing around this thing. I'm going to be Mr. Sprinter, you know, and I go on. And then I came around and I hit the wind. And now I'm tired because I've already run my event, you know, and I'm not a sprinter. I don't have any endurance, and this wind hits me, and I felt like I was, like, into my knees in mud. And I can hear these guys coming behind me like a choo-choo train, and they went by me like I was standing still. And now I can, like, I'm just, like, barely running into the wind, looking like a two-miler, at the pace of a two-miler. And the guy in front starts swearing and cussing at me on my team. Get your ass up here. What the, you know, he's like, and you know, I'm going as fast as I can, and I finally give him the baton, and he takes off, and he's dead last. We totally lose. And as I walk over to the rest of the team and everything, they start yelling at me. What happened to you? You were way ahead. What's going on with you? I can't even believe you suck. How'd you do that? And I'm like, I mean, I remember getting so angry. It's like, stupid Mike Blackledge. I don't even, you know, it's like, how'd he force me to do this? And of course, I felt like an idiot because, you know, and that happens in families. You know, you're pretty sure about something, but you sort of get forced into it. And I'm just saying, you know, be careful with that. You know, be careful with it because you can put somebody in a situation that it can leave a mark. That's the only year I ever ran track. I was like, I'm not going to be in a situation like that. And, you know, you just have to be careful. And I know there's other times when I was in high school, I took a Spanish class, And I got into it a little ways, and it was really super hard. You actually had to study, which I didn't do much of. And so I was like, but I really wanted to speak Spanish, but I didn't want to do any of the work. And so I got a little ways into it, and I just dropped out. And nobody forced me, nobody pushed me, nobody said anything. And you know what? I wish they had. Because I'd love to be able to speak Spanish now, but I can't. Because at that point, so what I'm saying is, it's probably more of an art than a science as a parent. Like, when do you push, and when do you not push? Now, like Mary, the mother of Jesus, she's pushing. He's like, Mom, I don't want to be involved in this. You know, and she just keeps sort of like, but I think you should. And she knows about weddings. Girls are usually better at weddings. I mean, most women, when they go to a wedding, if they're not married, they pick out all the things in the wedding that they think they might put in their wedding. And then the rest of the stuff, they go, I would never get dresses like that. Did you see that color of those? Where'd they get those ugly shoes? God, that's terrible. You know, but they're like, and the dudes, they're just thinking of the reception, you know, hoping there's cold beer there. I mean, but the girls, they're actually into the wedding, watching and listening and everything, you know. And, you know, Mary understood that. She's like watching this thing, and in this culture, weddings were a big social deal. I mean, families would save forever, and sometimes they still do. I mean, they'll like save a lot of money to throw this party. They would last for a week. They'd have like a week-long party for a wedding. Everybody take off work. Everything shuts down. Big, huge celebration, because in that day, you didn't get that many of them. We live like kings in our culture, man. Most people have houses that are almost the size of Solomon's castle. Seriously. I mean, the foods that we eat were like called banquets in their day. And so, like, in their day, to really be able to let your hair down and have plenty of wine and tons of food and not have to go to work, I mean, that was a huge, everybody looked forward to it. The wedding's in, like, 5 more days. And then halfway through, they run out of wine. I mean, that's a drag. Have you ever been at a party when you go over to the ice chest and you open it up and there's nothing in there but, like, maybe a nasty little Olympia beer, that's it? I mean, you're like, what kind of party's this? It's terrible, you know? And so, you know, I mean, the wine is all gone. And they're like, ugh. And Mary sees it, and her heart goes out. She's got a mercy gift. You might be like that. Every problem you see, you want to make better. Everything that goes on in life, you look at, and you're like, oh, man, I hate to see them. Some people are so grouchy on the inside, but on the inside, you know, on the outside, they're very grouchy, but inside, they have a soft heart. I had this this friend, and he married this girl, and she had a cat. Now, he said he was going to make a rug out of it. He said he was going to drown it. I mean, he like every cat joke imaginable, you know. And cat people are kind of weird anyways. I mean, because to me, they get so excited about the intelligence of their cat. Do you know what my cat can do? It can go over to the door, and you know it wants out. And you're like, whoa, wow, that's big. I mean, you know, that's cats. Or you tell them, you say, cats are so much more stupid than dogs. Oh, no way, they're not. I said, well, have you ever seen a seeing eye cat? I mean, do they employ them to sniff the drugs out at the airport? Oh, and here's the standard answer by cat lovers. Well, they're too smart to be doing anything like that. Oh, yeah, okay. But anyways, on and on about the cats. One night she gets up in the middle of the night, she hears something, and she comes into the kitchen, and he's got a saucer of milk, and he's putting it down for the cat, stroking its back. And she's like, what are you doing? And he said, I'm getting ready to kill the cat. I just, you know, he's like, because on the outside, very grouchy. But on the inside, has a soft heart. And sometimes people are like that. You got a mercy gift, you can't see it. And Mary wasn't. She was soft on the outside and the inside. Maybe that's why God picked her. Whatever. She sees the problem, and she's like, come on, man, Jesus, do something about this. You could do something about this. And he had never done a miracle yet. And he's like, whip out his credit card. I mean, I don't know what she thought was going to happen, but she's like, you know, you could really do something about this problem. They don't have any more booze. So for everybody that thinks it's not okay to drink, I mean, deal with that story. The Bible says don't get drunk. Doesn't say anything about not drinking. First miracle Jesus ever did was supply alcohol for a party. Go figure. It's in there. Come on, Jesus, do something about it. And I just wanted to say this, that you'll constantly have tensions in your family for what you should be involved in or not. Is there anybody in your family you can't accept because it's like they've involved themselves in some things and you're not okay with it? And so you can't accept them. It's hard in families. I was talking to someone that, a while back at a coffee shop, and they found out about our church through a newspaper article, and so they were telling me that they hadn't been going to church for, I'm going to say, almost 30 years, and so we were just kind of talking about it, and I said, well, what happened? They said, well, you know, I had to go to church. My parents forced me to go to church all my life, and it was a church where you had to dress up, which is fine, but, you know, little boys normally don't like to, but everybody's all dressed up. The girls are in the nylons and the whole get doodle dandy. And so anyways, they're all, the whole family, you know, they're going to church. But the rule was that at a certain age in this particular thing, you could opt out of church. You could say, I'm not going to church anymore. So this kid, this man now that I'm talking to, you know, he's like, I couldn't wait for that day. And he goes, I want to tell you something. On the day where I was allowed to not go to church anymore, he goes, I sat on the couch with Lucky Charms watching cartoons as my family marched out the door looking like dorks to go to church. And it was the happiest day of my life. And I was just listening to him, you know. He said, it was also one of the saddest because my dad came home and later that night sat me down and said, it's okay if you don't want to go to church, but I won't treat you like a son until you return to church. So that'll leave a mark. You're gonna be involved in what I say so, or I'm not going to be able to be with you and accept you. Especially when a church, it's rough, because guess what people think? Well, God must be like that too. If I don't do what God says all the time, I'm out. And so, you know, this is quite a little story here that's going on. You know, Mary's talking with Jesus, and Jesus says no. And it seems like they have a pretty healthy relationship, and here's why. They don't fear rejection. And just jot it down in the line somewhere. Healthy families can disagree without the fear of rejection. If the only reason I agree with you is because I don't want to be rejected, it's really not agreement. It's self-serving. I don't want to go through the consequences of your rejection. So I'll agree with you on the outside. But every single agreement makes me more bitter. And Mary and Jesus, somehow they've sorted this out. And they're like, you know what? The ability to accept you is not based on how this turns out. I'm not going to reject you if we can't agree. And so you can really press for your side of it, and she just keeps pressing. He tells her no, and Mary goes and gets some other people, and she says, go and do whatever he tells you to do. And so Jesus is finally, I got my mom off my back about this thing, you know, and he's over here with his buddies, and some people march over and said, that lady over there said you were going to tell us to do something about the wine. He's like, oh my gosh, mom! You know, like, what? Come on! I didn't tell her that. Did she tell you that? I didn't tell her that, man. I mean, she's pressing him. And Jesus apparently doesn't fear the rejection from his mother because he doesn't cave either. He's like, I'm not doing it. You know, I don't want to get involved in that. And it continues to process. When you don't feel rejected, you can keep processing things. You know, this guy I was talking to, he didn't have to be estranged from his father for 25 years over church. Come on. But they couldn't process it anymore. They couldn't discuss it anymore. And here was this is the crazy thing in that story. He called his dad's bluff. He never went back to church. 12 years old, never went back to church. Guess what? He wasn't the relationship at that point was severed. Is that crazy? I mean, I get that the dad really, really wanted him to go to church. I understand that. And I get that the kid really, really didn't want to go to church. But does it have to end in rejection? They couldn't process it. They couldn't keep talking about it. They couldn't grow up with it. They could have had 1,000 good conversations, man. And they never did. And so Jesus is talking with his mom. And I don't know what happened. He must have thought it through differently or something. He rethinks it, and all of a sudden he decides. He tells this little caravan that she sends over. Parents are like that too sometimes, you know. They'll call somebody up, and you talk to them, you know. So the caravan comes over. He says, all right, listen. He goes, over there, there's some stone jars with some water in it. Go over there and you know, see what's in those jars. And they go over, and they're all filled with wine. They're like, wine for everybody. You know, people are like, yahoo, you know, and they're like, party time again, you know. And it was the very first miracle that Jesus ever did. Crazy. In the context of family, he didn't plan it, and he didn't want to do it. His mom kept pressing. I wanted to say this to you. Sometimes you'll need to trust somebody in your family, even though you totally disagree with them, because they'll have a perspective that you don't have. I don't know what Mary saw. I don't know what it was that she got, but there was something that she saw that Jesus couldn't see, and I hope that doesn't offend you, because he was a man. There was something he couldn't see initially at first glance. And he was willing to trust his mom, even though he totally disagreed with her. You know why? He didn't fear her rejection. Do you know why she could keep pressing? She knew she wasn't going to get rejected. And he rethinks it, and he's like, all right. I don't know how he did it, like zzz or something, you know, but wine, you know? And all of a sudden there's wine for everybody. And this is the part I want to get, and some of you have been Christians for a while, so you've heard the story. This is a really key thing. It says that at that point, his disciples put their faith in him. It's interesting that it occurred. Like, when you read that at first blush, you're thinking, well, obviously, you turn water into wine. I mean, you know, you're going to jump on board with someone like that. But what if that wasn't the whole thing? What if they're watching how he related to his mother, and they're like, no way. Seriously? Another thing you need to know in that day, for a Jewish mom to have that kind of authority and that kind of a clout with a son was rare. In fact, FYI, Jesus has always been different with women when it came to who they can be in his kingdom. And so they're watching that whole thing, and maybe they are like, whoa. And it said it was the best wine. That's kind of a cool deal, too, is like when Jesus does a miracle, it's not like, oh, what you barely need. I mean, he's just like, you know, this is the stuff from the liquor store. This isn't the cheap wine that you buy somewhere. I mean, this is the good stuff, you know. And so they're amazed by that. And back to this idea that you start off with a friend with Jesus, but you have to move to being a disciple. Initially, and we always process at East Lake Church, initially, you would never dream that Jesus would be your friend. And then at some point you get, really? Seriously? He'd be my friend. He would be with me. He would just be with me. No obligations. I don't have to change anything. And it's a great friendship. But at some point, every friend has to transition to a disciple. And what does that mean? Devotion and prioritizing. When you're a disciple, it helps you prioritize your life, prioritize your money and your time and how you treat people and where you get your strength. Disciples prioritize differently than friends. And they see the miracle, and they see the interaction between him and his mother, and they transition in becoming disciples of him. So I wanted to ask the Christ followers, are you transitioning? Like, where are you in terms of closeness and devotion compared to even a month ago? You start out as a friend, but you do become a disciple. And so that's this story. Now, one kind of action step in this is there anybody that you disagree with in your family because they won't get involved in what you want them to be involved with, or they won't stop involving themselves in something? Here's all they need to know: that you're not going to reject them. That's it. I mean, you could try to go sell them on the idea, fine, but they're going to need to know this. This is going to have to be on the table. If I never do what you think I should do, I'm not going to be rejected. Man, that's life for people. It's how God treats us, and that's how we can treat other people. And then some of you, you've been pretty hurt because you got involved in things your folks or your uncle or somebody said you shouldn't. Girls get with guys, and guys do things, and you know, things just go down, and you really do feel rejected, and you get hurt. And I just want to say, you know, God cares about that. Even if you can't patch it up with your folks or your sister or your auntie or something like that, they just may not play ball. They just may not do it. Jesus will. He gets it. He knows the story. And he'll heal you of something. He'll be willing to bring healing in your life where you've been rejected and all you ever did was just said, no, I'm not willing to be involved in that. And bam, someone hit you hard. So the second thing, turn your notes over. Let's look at another story. Acceptance is not based on compliance. Compliance is such a really dangerous thing. Here's the problem with compliance is it can cause you to be mindless and non-thinking. You just become like a robot because you don't want to be hurt. and you don't want to get in trouble. So you just comply with things. And it can be really extreme at times. Here's an extreme story about it. True story, Nazis come to power in Germany. And you know, if you read the history of it, they don't shut down all the Christian churches. They don't at all. They just, it's mandatory that the Christian churches comply with the Nazi agenda. That's all, just a small little thing. You can still have your churches, you can still be pastor, but you have to comply with the Nazi agenda. So that's what went on in Germany. Two pastors, really good friends. One pastor decides, I can't do that. So they put him in prison, along with a lot of other church leaders. His friend decides, I'm going to comply. I'm not willing to get in trouble. I'm not willing to go through whatever it means to not comply. I'm complying. So on the surface, he adopts the Nazi agenda. And he's always thinking about his friend that's in prison. And finally, he gets a pass. Now listen, in his heart, he never did. But on the outside and on the surface, he did. And that's a real problem. When you act one way on the surface and you believe a different way in your heart, it's like a schizophrenic way of living. And it just it constantly keeps you out of balance. The Bible says that a double-minded person is unstable in all they do. And so that was this guy. He knows, I never would believe that that's God's will for a people. But on the surface, he's like, you know, and that's his life. And so he finally gets this pass, and he goes and visits his friend. His friend's in prison. And when he sees him, they sit down, and there's this like screen that they're looking through. And he's looking at his friend, and he sees him sitting there. And he says to his friend that's in prison, he says, why are you in here? And his friend looks through the screen and says, why are you not? And the moral of the story is we all comply at some level. We don't want to get in trouble with our family members. We don't want to get rejected by them. We don't want to be hurt by them. So we comply. Now listen to this story about Jesus. Then Jesus entered a house, and again a crowd gathered, so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. So listen to something and keep that up just for a second. Listen to something about his ministry. You know, and we patterned Eastlake, and all churches do, but nothing special about us. But we patterned Eastlake after him as best we can because when he came, his message was God cares about you and wants to be involved in every area of your life. He's inviting you to be with him. Can you make a place for God in your life? And that's his message. And he's so approachable, and people are so blown away by him and who he talks with and who he's willing to be with. And then there's some miracles, and it's quite a thing. And it doesn't just start off small. I mean, this thing takes off like a rocket. There's huge crowds of people, and there's stories swirling about. I saw him take 3 pieces of bread and some fish, and I'm telling you, there must have been 10,000 people there, and they all ate. And said, shut up. Nobody does that. I'll go see him for myself. And he says, I'm not playing, man. My aunt was blind. I knew that kid since I was like in like forever. He was dead, and there he is. He's walking across the street. Jesus was at his funeral, and that's the kind of stuff people are talking about. And so this thing is spreading like crazy, and people are like, seriously, what could it possibly be? And this is a religious nation, so like for them, they've been waiting for a Messiah. Now the problem is the church is saying he's not the one. God doesn't look like that. He looks like us. He makes demands on your life. And everybody else is going, sorry, we're going to that show. And so they're hanging out with Jesus in crowds, bigger and bigger and bigger. So he's at this house now. When his family heard about this, so they're hearing all these stories. They're watching what's going on. All this stuff is coming through different avenues. And, you know, they hear about it. They went to take charge of him, for they said he's out of his mind. That's quite a assertion to make. He's crazy. He's Lulu. He's nuts. They probably thought Jesus was going to start a nice little church somewhere, sing some cool little Jewish hymns, and kind of be like a proper mega pastor. But he's not like that. And they're like, what? Your brother is telling everybody he's God again. You know, and they're like, we got to get a hold of it. Listen. Anytime someone in your family confuses you or scares you, you may feel the urge to control them. Ever had anybody in your family try to control you? They're just confused and they're scared. They're like, what? You know, are you nuts? You're going to drop out of college? You're a soft. What are you going to get into? You're out of your mind. What do you mean you're pregnant? You're not even married, man. Are you crazy? You can't have that baby. There's thousands of them, you can say. You're quitting your job without having another job to go to? Do you just know job one-on-one says never do that? Are you you're not moving back in with us? You're crazy if you think. What have you ever heard from a family member and in some way they've said to you, you're crazy. You know, you're going to keep going to school? You've been in school like forever. Your loans, I mean, I'm just saying. Like what has ever happened and another family member has said, you're crazy for doing that. Jesus Christ. His family member thinks he's nuts. They hear all the stories. And they want him to comply. They show up at this huge gathering, and they're not there to just sort of check it out. They're there to in this language, take charge of him means they're going to physically take charge of him. Now, Jesus is smart. He's got some bouncers out front. You know what I mean? And so they can't even get to him. Maybe he learned a lesson from his mother. He sends an envoy out. He doesn't even talk to his family. And sometimes you need another family member or a friend to talk for you. And he sends him out and he says, Jesus said he's not stopping. Man, that can be refreshing sometimes to say to a family member. I know where you're coming from. I'm not stopping. I'm going to continue to go to school. I'm going to have the baby. I'm going to work it out somehow. I'm sorry. I can't work there another day, and I'm not putting anything. I'm going forward with my idea. Everybody in your family at some point will have an agenda for you. And so oftentimes it's what they need to have happen so they won't be afraid any longer. Jesus, could you just calm it down? Why do you have to freak everybody out? He sends an envoy out. He said he's not stopping. Well, you tell him we want to talk to him. What part of not stopping did you not understand? He's talking to people right now. He's not even coming out to talk to you. You think they were offended? Well, of course they were. When you read the Bible about Jesus and his family, you get that they were pretty healthy. They had some things to work through. And somehow they worked through this one. The first time, you know, like Jesus rethinks it, and he's like, you know what, I think my mom is right. But this time he says, you know what, you're going to have to deal with me. We'll have to decide if we could accept each other, because you don't understand what God's doing in my life. You don't understand my mission, and that's understandable. But I'm still not stopping. I'm not going to reject you because you showed up today and tried to rain on my parade. We're still good, but I'm not stopping. And they have to decide, well, fine, if you're going to be that way, Jesus, I'll do everything in my strength to put you down. Or don't you ever set foot in my house again with that guy. Well, when you just decide to go back to school, you let me know. And that's not what they do. His mother had her ups and downs with Jesus through the years, but she remains faithful. And by the way, she's part of this crew. And she was also part of the crew at the foot of the cross when Jesus died. She was right there. She just kept processing. And listen, when you comply, the processing stops because you don't think anymore. But if you can accept each other, you can continue to process it. And Mary and the family, they continue to think about, well, what did he tell us? And Mom, tell us that story again about how he was born. Well, who are those crazy people that showed up underneath that star? And what did he do when he was 12 years old at the temple? What does it say in the Old Testament? Wait, let's talk. Let's keep thinking about this, because he seems serious. He's not going to stop, and he's not the type of person that treats us that way. And so they just keep processing. And you know what? His brothers... they end up being some of the most significant. James is the most significant leader in the early church, his brother James. And his brothers were some of the most significant leaders in the early church. They process all the way that the very thing they thought was crazy, they ultimately devote their entire lives to. So I'm just saying, if you're good with God on something and your family thinks you're crazy, hang in there. Because they might come around at some point and go, man, I am so sorry I thought that. I'm on board now. But then again, you got to look at yourself. Is there anybody you think's crazy? You're like, no way, man. Are you sure? Be careful. And somehow, because they're willing to accept each other, they can stay together. And that's his family. What about ours? Look here, the good news. Acceptance is based on love. Always be humble and gentle. Be patient and accept each other with love. And why does the Bible say always? I mean, is it even possible? I mean, would you feel any better if this sentence said, once in a while? You know, sometimes when you're having a good day, 5 out of 10. I'm just saying, I mean, you have to admit, that's a pretty, I mean, always be humble and gentle? Seriously? On this God's green earth? Be patient and accept each other with love. Let me tell you why God sets the bar so high. So we'll never get the idea that we can do it ourselves. Today I'm going to be humble and gentle all day long in every circumstances because I'm all that. No, you know what happens when you read a sentence like that? You're like, okay, let's go, Lord. Let's go. Here we go. Today we're going to try to be humble and gentle, and today we're going to try to accept them again after what they did to me yesterday. Let's go, God. I'm telling you, don't make Christianity out to be some kind of a course in spiritual greatness or strength, because it isn't. You'll never make it. He died on the cross as an eternal symbol to say, you'll need me. In this last part here, I know it's daylight savings time because there are not many of us, but I've been reading the whole time. I'm going to need you guys' help for a second. So let's read this last scripture together, and please don't read it like you're in a library, okay? You're down in Vegas at a casino. You have to raise your voice. Okay, so here we go. Say it nice and loud. Here we go. Ready? Go. I could not make myself acceptable to God by obeying the law of Moses. God accepted me simply because of my faith in Christ. Great job. So here's what I'm wanting you to know. You'll be able to accept somebody when you can love somebody. Love is the pathway to acceptance. If you have somebody in your life right now and you can't accept them, stop trying. Because that's not the first step. The Bible is very, very clear. Accept each other with love. But when you love somebody that you have to be with them, that paves the way to acceptance. Just drop it. Just say, okay, this is what I need, God. I need to love them. Acceptance will just start to flood in. And that happens when you can believe that God loves you. And you may right now not feel very lovable. You may even have a secret or a splinter in your heart or a thorn in your shoe. And you're just like, seriously, I did that again? I can't believe that. I mean, I don't feel lovable. And so I'm glad God brought you here tonight. So you could know this, that you don't earn God's acceptance. God accepts you because he loves you. And when you can catch his love for just a moment, this is what it's saying. You'll have the faith to believe that you're accepted. Now, so many people, they're just like, I have to, like, somehow, I want God to accept me. You never will feel accepted. You'll feel loved. And when you feel loved, you'll have the faith to believe that he accepts you. And it works the same way with us in other people's lives. When we love them, acceptance occurs.